So you know that feeling, like the whole leadership landscape is just shifting so fast, it's almost hard to keep your feet on the ground
Oh,
sometimes.
absolutely. Or maybe you're looking at the way things have always been done, those traditional hierarchies.
Right.
And in this crazy world we're in now, they call it VUCA, right?
Yeah.
Volatile, uncertain.
Complex, ambiguous. Yeah. You just think there has to be a better way.
Exactly. The pressures today on leaders, on whole organizations, they're just
And the
immense.
old playbooks. They don't seem to fit anymore.
Not really. They just weren't designed for this level of, constant change.
And that's actually exactly what we're diving into today. We're going to unpack this concept called shared leadership.
Think of it like a new way of looking at leadership, maybe, and how organizations grow.
Yeah, a potential answer, maybe, for navigating this future of work stuff.
And hopefully, by the time we're done with this deep dive, you'll have a really clear picture of what it is.
What are the core bits? How does it try to fix the problems with the old ways?
Right. And even some of the, more modern management ideas that maybe haven't quite hit the mark, we're hoping you'll have a few aha moments.
Ooh, I like aha moment, yeah.
Yeah, seeing how concepts you might already know, like maybe Scrum or OKRs, how they connect up here in a, well, a pretty novel way.
Okay, sounds good. So where are we getting this information from?
Our main source is a white paper, Shared Leadership White Paper, dated January 2020. It's by Barbara Vitesse and Eva Maria Dancer.
And they know their stuff.
Yeah.
Organizational development.
Seems so, yeah. They bring a lot of experience to it.
Got it. So our mission today.
Simple, really. Let's really try to understand the core ideas behind this shared leadership thing.
And figure out what the potential upsides are for companies, but also for, the actual people working in them.
Exactly. Let's jump in.
Okay, so the why. Why do we even need something new? The paper starts by painting this picture of just massive change, right?
Yeah, it really sets the scene. It talks about projections like Asia potentially leading the global market by 2030. And it's not just geography, it's everything. Globalization, digitalization, AI, IoT, the whole lot.
And that obviously has a huge impact on work itself.
A direct ripple effect, yeah. The authors mentioned predictions that like 65% of jobs could be totally new in the next 10 years.
65%, that's huge.
It is, and those routine tasks. More and more automation. So the actual nature of work is changing fundamentally.
This is where the old top-down structures start to creak a bit.
Exactly. They really feel the strain, decision making that has to go up and down the chain. It's just too slow.
Yeah, you can see that. And it leads to people feeling disconnected.
Disengaged, yeah. The
Yeah.
paper even uses the term inner resignation. Like people show up, but they've mentally checked out.
Oof, been there.
We probably all have at some point. And it creates this massive challenge for the leaders themselves, too.
How so?
Well, they're often expected to be both the traditional manager, control tasks, and this inspiring modern leader who develops people.
Trying to be everything to everyone.
Pretty much. Juggling demands from all sides leads to burnout. No wonder leadership roles seem less attractive sometimes.
The paper mentions a survey about German management maybe not being future ready.
Yeah, a Korn Ferry survey. It just highlights that pressure leaders are under.
And it's not just the leaders feeling it. Employee engagement numbers are pretty bleak, right?
Stagnant, according to Gallup study cited, around 15%. And worse, the actively disengaged group has grown
That's a lot of wasted potential.
a huge amount. And then you layer on the expectations of younger generations, millennials, Gen Y.
What are they looking for?
Often it's about purpose. They want to co-create, have a say. And that life balance thing the paper mentions.
Ah, the blurring lines between work and home.
Exactly. They're often skeptical of those, top-down mission statements if they don't feel real.
Right. And the paper talks about this dilemma of fostering and demanding for managers.
Yeah, that tightrope walk, trying to be the friendly leader can sometimes backfire if it doesn't feel authentic.
People see through it.
Often, yeah. And then you get disappointment, frustration. It hits performance, value creation, everything. It's a tough spot.
So basically, the world changed, work changed, people changed, but leadership models haven't really kept up.
That's the core argument. The old ways are struggling, hence the need for something potentially radically different, like shared leadership.
Okay, so the problem's clear. But people have tried things before, haven't they? It's not like organizations just sat there.
Oh, definitely not. The paper acknowledges that. We've seen agile methods become huge Scrum Kanban.
Right. And things like the HR business partner model.
Yep. And even more radical stuff like Holacracy. plus countless leadership philosophies over the years.
So why didn't those things fully solve the problem, according to the paper?
Well, it's a nuanced agile, for instance, super valuable concepts, customer focus, iterations, but it didn't always boost overall employee engagement across the board.
Why not?
Sometimes it was implemented kind of patchily, like you'd have agile teams working within a very traditional, rigid structure elsewhere.
Oh, okay. Islands of agility in a sea of hierarchy.
Something like that. And the HR business partner idea, great intention, make HR more strategic.
But often ended up still doing mostly admin and support.
That's what the paper suggests, yeah.
Yeah.
Less driving fundamental shifts.
And holacracy, that super flat structure.
Emphasizes purpose, self-organization, which is great. But the paper points out a weakness. When things get tough in a crisis,
people snap back to command and control.
Often, yeah. It's familiar, feels safer in the moment, even if it's not the best long-term approach.
Makes sense. What about all those leadership training programs and philosophies?
Useful for individuals, definitely, developing mindset. But the paper argues they haven't always created the needed systemic change across the whole organization.
So individuals might change, but the system stays the same. Employees can still feel undervalued.
Exactly. That deep organizational mindset shift is just hard and slow.
But the paper does see some positive signs.
Yeah.
Things moving in the right direction.
Yeah, it mentions newer collaborative formats like Theory U, working out loud, signs of a shift towards more self-responsibility, shared ownership.
Okay.
But the bottom line, the really crucial point, is that despite all these efforts, the big jumps in engagement and agility that companies wanted, they haven't consistently happened.
Which suggests we need more than just tweaks, maybe a whole new way of thinking about leadership.
Precisely. Which brings us right back to Shared Leadership Day.
Okay. Let's get into it then. Shared leadership, what is it at its core?
So the paper defines it as this integrated approach. It pulls together bits from leadership theory, organizational development.
You mentioned Scrum and OKRs earlier.
Exactly. Elements of those, plus a real focus on mindset and ideas from New Work. It tries to combine these at both the big organizational level and the individual level.
Okay. And what's the big innovation here? What makes it different?
The core idea is distributing leadership. Not having it all sit with one person or even just top management. Instead, it's spread across three interconnected nodes or roles.
Three nodes. Okay. Why is that important?
Well, straight away, it builds resilience, right? No single point of failure. Decisions get looked at from different angles, which in that VUCA world we talked about is pretty vital.
Makes sense. Let's break down the name Shared and Shift. What do they mean here?
Shared is about deliberately splitting leadership into these specific roles, giving them to different people, using their different viewpoints, their strengths. It's about leadership emerging from collaboration.
Okay. And the shift part?
That signals the fundamental change. Leadership isn't just top down anymore. It becomes a shared thing, a responsibility that actually rotates over time.
Rotates.
Interesting. Yeah. And it's all supported by a clear framework. The whole point of this shift is to push the organization towards more self-organization, more autonomy.
And central to this is something called the triumvirate.
That's the foundation, yes. The triumvirate is that core group of three distinct but very collaborative leadership roles handling the operational side.
Three roles. And then later, the paper mentions the triumvirate plus. What's the plus?
The plus is adding a fourth element, the purpose and strategy leader role. This one operates more at the overall organizational level.
Focusing on culture and value creation.
Exactly. Culture, making sure the organization creates sustainable value. So when you have the three triumvirate roles working closely with this purpose and strategy leader, that's the full triumvirate plus side.
Got it. Okay, let's unpack those triumvirate roles then. First up, the customer and value leader. What's their job?
Their main focus. Deeply understanding the customer. What do they need? What benefits are they really looking for? They're basically the customer's champion inside the system.
Voice of the customer. And what do they actually do?
Key things include evaluating how the team's doing from that customer viewpoint, defining what's needed for each piece of work, each iteration. And crucially, they're the ones who accept the final deliverables.
Okay.
They also work really closely with the team and performance leader. We'll get to them next to set out the specs, the metrics, the budget. They act as a sparring partner for the team. Help get resources, manage customer relationships.
Internal and external customers.
Both, yeah. And one person in this role could potentially work with several teams or triumvirates.
Right, that makes sense. Okay, role number two, team and performance leader. What's their world?
Their core job is making sure the team works effectively, gets the results needed, on time, meeting the quality standards. Performance, basically.
So how do they make that happen?
They're the bridge, really, between the customer and value leader, the outside view, and the team doing the work, the inside view.
Connecting the dots.
Exactly. Aligning goals, resources. Ideally, they structure work in sprints for timely delivery. They motivate the team, support their professional growth, help get resources.
Nurture team spirit, make sure rules are followed.
All of that. Ideally, they might even have a say in who's on the team. And they work with the third leader, the people and culture leader, on individual development stuff.
How big are the teams they usually handle?
Paper suggests typically around 5 to 7 people, maybe more if the team is really mature and self-organizing.
Okay, clear. And that brings us to the third role in the triumvirate, the people and culture leader. What's their focus?
Their focus is squarely on the individual employee, their interests, their personal situation, their development. Plus, they have a strategic role in shaping the company's overall people and culture strategy.
That sounds quite different from the other two. More personal.
Absolutely. They provide support through coaching, helping people find growth opportunities, trying to optimize their working conditions. They also keep an eye on the organizational culture, the team dynamics.
But not performance reviews.
Critically, no. The paper stresses this role is kept completely separate from performance evaluation. That's vital for building trust, making sure the focus is genuinely on development and well-being, not judgment.
That's a really interesting distinction.
It is. And like the customer leader, they often work across multiple teams, multiple triumvirates. The paper even floats the idea that HR, if it evolves strategically, could be a natural home for this kind of people and culture focused role.
Interesting thought. Okay, so those three cover the operational side. Now back to the plus the purpose and strategy leader. What specific value do they add?
Right. This role, often it's a small team, operates at that bigger picture level. It's inherently strategic.
Meaning?
They're responsible for developing and constantly reflecting on the organization's governance, the basic rules, the values, and cultivating the overall culture. They help shape the organization's big why, its purpose.
Using things like Simon Sinek's Golden Circle, that framework emphasizing starting with why before how and what.
Exactly. Frameworks like that. They act as guardians of the culture. They kickstart and guide the creation of the North Star, the long-term strategic direction.
And then translate that strategy into action.
Right. Using things like sprints and OKRs to make it operational.
And how is this role typically set up? Is it just one person?
Often starts as an interdisciplinary team, maybe 5-7 people, initially perhaps from top management. But the vision is for it to become more networked over time, too.
Does the team stay the same?
Rotation is encouraged long term to spread that strategic thinking. But the paper suggests maybe keeping it stable for the first 2-3 years, just for continuity while things embed.
And when this role works well with the other three?
That's when you get the full power of the triumvirate plus Desai, the strategic direction and the operational execution all pulling together.
Okay, so you have these four roles, potentially four different people or teams.
Mm-hmm.
How do they actually work together day to day? How does the triumvirate collaborate?
Yeah, good collaboration is absolutely make or break here. The paper really hammers home the need for clear governance.
The rules of engagement.
Basically, yeah. Clear values, rules for respectful discussion, how decisions get made, and making sure they speak with one voice when communicating outwards. Consistency is key.
Is there a recommended meeting rhythm?
They suggest a regular weekly meeting. Keep it short, max 60 minutes. Use it for quick mini retrospectives, what worked, what didn't, and to align on the sprint goals for the coming week.
And how long does this setup last?
Typically starts when a team forms and ends when it dissolves. But interestingly, the paper says you could apply this even in traditional setups for defined periods. Maybe even involve team members in assigning the roles if they're qualified.
Right. Okay, let's revisit that shift idea. Can we recap the key ways leadership actually changes with this shared leadership approach?
Sure. The paper sums it up nicely. First, leadership gets shaped by those three core perspectives simultaneously: the customer, the team value creation process, and the individual employee.
Not just one boss's view.
Exactly. Second, it becomes genuinely shared, cooperative, done among peers. Third, it's deliberately depersonalized. It's about the role, not the individual's power.
Less ego involved, maybe?
Hopefully. Fourth, it's designed to be a rotating responsibility over time. Fifth, it's something lived collectively by everyone. Sixth, It leverages people's actual strengths for specific roles.
Okay, strengths. Makes sense.
And finally, it acts as a driver, pushing towards more collaboration, more self-organization throughout the whole company.
That's quite a shift, all right.
Yeah.
Does the paper give an example to make it more concrete?
Yeah, it does. It uses an example of, say, two leaders with different complementary strengths.
Okay.
One might be brilliant at team performance, keeping things running smoothly, motivating people. The other might be amazing at understanding customer needs, coming up with innovative solutions.
Right, different skill sets.
In a traditional setup, you might expect one person to somehow be great at both, which is tough. Someone's strength might be someone else's weakness.
Sure.
But with shared leadership, you can say, okay, you're clearly strong on team performance. You take the team and performance leader role. You're fantastic with customers. You take the customer and value leader role.
And then someone else handles the people and culture part.
Exactly. You leverage everyone's strengths, creating a more balanced and likely more effective leadership team for that group.
Yeah, that example really helps clarify it. Okay, so let's say an organization is interested. How do they actually do this?
Mm-hmm.
The paper mentions pathways, the Hall of Heroes.
Huh, yeah, the Hall of Heroes. It outlines three main ways to get there, three implementation pathways. First is the experiment.
Sounds cautious.
It is. You introduce the triumvirate, just the three roles, in a specific pilot group, maybe for 12 months, within your existing structure.
Like a new project or a team that's struggling.
Yeah, or a department in transition, somewhere you can try it out safely. Key things are lots of communication with the pilot team, setting up clear governance, starting with short sprints, maybe 4 weeks, then extending them.
And learning as you go.
Absolutely. A final retrospective is crucial. And they strongly recommend having an experienced guide or facilitator for this first step.
Makes sense. What's pathway number two?
That's for the learning organization. This is aimed at companies already using agile methods, like Scrum or maybe design thinking.
Okay, they've already started the journey.
Right. And they want to go deeper, boost agility and self-organization further. Here, you implement the full triumvirate plus, say, the four roles.
How does that work with existing agile roles?
You'd refine them. Maybe your product owner becomes the customer and value leader. Your scrum master evolves into the team and performance leader. And then you formally add the people and culture leader.
Ah, filling that gap.
Exactly. A big part here is collaboratively creating a new governance model and implementing it iteratively. Lots of focus on learning between the roles, maybe with coaches first, then internal mentors.
Okay. And the third path, strategic redesign. Sounds like the big one.
It is. This is for organizations ready for a full-scale transformation, a fundamental shift.
Where do you even start with that?
It starts right at the core, defining the organization's purpose, that why, using frameworks like the Golden Circle we mentioned.
So purpose first.
Absolutely. That guides everything else. Mm-hmm. The purpose and strategy leader team drives this, usually starting top down. Then you define the how, the governance, making sure it's properly resourced.
And then the what? The strategy?
The North Star, yeah. But defined iteratively, not like old linear planning. Then OKRs and sprints involve the triumvirates, all working within that constantly evolving governance framework.
This sounds like a multi-year effort.
Definitely. The paper estimates 3-5 years, usually starts at the top. And you'd likely need an external journey guide initially to help build up internal capability, those internal multipliers.
Wow, okay. Three distinct paths. But regardless of which one a company chooses, are there common success factors, things you have to get right?
Yes, the paper highlights three absolutely critical ones. First, a real focus on people.
I mean,
training people in collaboration skills, decision making in this new distributed way, how to leverage different perspectives. Things like learning journeys can really help here.
Okay. Skills development. What's second?
Role assignment. Understanding that each role needs distinct skills and content knowledge.
Like we discussed before, people and culture needs coaching skills. Team and performance needs team coaching. Customer and value needs customer insight.
Exactly. Being clear on those competencies. Maybe using interim roles, developing specific qualifications for each.
Got it. And the third factor?
Process support. You need guidance during the change, especially early on with experiments or just the triumvirate. Lots of communication, lots of reflection.
And the culture aspect.
That needs ongoing attention too. The cultural framework isn't static. It evolves. The purpose and strategy leader, with support from people and culture, needs to nurture that culture network, supported by the triumvirate structure itself. It's a continuous process.
Okay. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are the absolute essential things to remember about shared leadership?
Yeah.
The main takeaways?
I think the main thing is that it's a really compelling and timely response to how complex work has become.
Addressing those VUCA challenges we started with?
Exactly. Its real strength is how it distributes leadership across those defined roles in the triumvirate, guided by that strategic purpose and strategy piece.
Bringing different perspectives together.
Right. And keeping that dual focus, delivering great customer value and looking after employee well-being and growth. The ultimate goal is helping the whole organization become more agile, more self-organizing.
That sums it up really well. And maybe that leaves a final thought for you listening in.
Mm-hmm.
Considering all the complexity, the pace of change you see in your own work, how could a more distributed, role-based approach to leadership like this, how might that unlock something new?
Yeah, new levels of engagement, maybe? Innovation? Yeah. Effectiveness?
Worth thinking about, isn't it? Compared to the leadership structures you know, could shared leadership offer a different path for your organization?
And if you are curious, if you want to explore how this might work for you specifically,
where can people find out more?
The authors, Barbara Vidash and Eva Maria Dancer, have more information on their website. It's www.sharedleadership.com.
Sharedleadership.com. Got it.
Or you can email them, info@leadership.com. It's a chance to, you know, explore if your organization is ready to head towards that Hall of Heroes.